Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Did you know that Xavi Hernandez used to scan over 8 times in the 10 seconds before receiving the ball? It's therefore not surprising that he rarely lost it. Scientific studies have shown just how important scanning is in soccer. Players who scan more, for example, make twice as many successful forward passes than those who scan less. But training this skill is difficult. And that's why thousands of players trust Be Your Best, the soccer training app in virtual reality, designed to improve players' game intelligence. To learn more, visit beyourbest.com and use code POD20 to get 20% off your first subscription.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Welcome to the show, brought to you with Levi Solicitors, who will offer you a 10% discount on your legal fees at levisolicitors.co.uk/thesquareball. Today, talking about the last World Cup that happened before the bad times kicked in at Leeds, which was in Japan and South Korea, who had both wanted to host the tournament independently at one stage, but ended up teaming up, didn't they? They compromised.
They did, and we compromised by getting up to drink beer at 7 in the morning. Which was good fun in its own way. Bit weird.
Yeah, the first World Cup hosted in an Asian country and the first hosted by more than one country with those difficult kickoff times. And we're picking on one particular player here today, or discussing him.
We're not picking on him, I don't think. I think there's more to be picked on. The crimes of Danny Mills more recently are probably a separate issue, I would say.
Which is why we've niched this one off a little.
Yeah, exactly. Because it was kind of interesting, Danny Mills at that World Cup.
Yeah. So Dan Moylan with you, along with Michael Normanton and Rob Conlon, for the TSB Guide to Danny Mills at the 2002 World Cup. Where were Leeds at the time? So that's the context. The important context here is that we were a Champions League club, weren't we?
We were trying to be.
Well, we're not anymore.
We'd failed for a second season running. So we just finished fourth, which at the time wasn't a Champions League place. We'd had the...
What do you think that means for the finances, Michael?
At the time, it seemed to mean that we'd have to sell someone, maybe a couple of players, but nothing catastrophic. But I'm remembering that correctly, Anna.
I think that's how it panned out.
Yeah. that's how what we thought, because it was like, well, that seems like a bit of an issue, but we've still got a hugely valuable squad. Still got some really good players. Maybe a couple will leave.
The UEFA Cup will be fun next year. That's, you know, nothing to worry about, is there?
Exactly. So I mean, given we're recording this just having drawn Cardiff in the FA Cup, this was the season where we played them, and we then didn't win a game for 7 after that one. So, yeah, a decent start.
There was
fell apart in the middle.
Mild sense of foreboding, but we didn't know the full extent of it until somewhere further down the track. And we still had this World Cup as a bit of a marker for the strength in our squad, because I think, you know, we'd grown up in particular not ever seeing any Leeds players in the England team, because we were shit in the 80s, obviously. So there was nothing through the 80s up until like 1990. And then Tony DiRigo became our standard bearer. And there were some little flirtations with it, in terms of like David Batty got his way in there, but that was mainly when he was away from Leeds, wasn't it? But this generation of players, when we'd spunked a load of money on them, quite a number of them got into the squad. Sven in charge of England at this point. So was this the so-called golden generation of players?
It was hugely exciting. Ashley Cole, you got Rio Ferdinand, Sol Campbell, still a relatively young man at this point. You got Beckham, Scholes, Michael Owen, and then David Seaman in net, who should have probably retired.
It's funny, you know, looking at this squad, because you've got the thing from Wikipedia here, you've taken a screenshot of all their players and their ages at that time as well. So many of them basically in my peer group at this point, and some of them like exactly the same age as me, which is 20 years ago. That's not fair.
Yeah, not the age you are now, to be clear.
Well, they will be.
Yeah.
They will have aged at the same rate that I have.
Yeah, but you're not saying you were...
No.
None of them are in the 40s at this squad. David Seaman, the oldest at 38. I mean,
there's a few pushing it, like Teddy Sheringham's still in there, Martin Keown's still in there. This is maybe the tournament just before there was all the golden generation hype. So.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose you've got Gerrard in there, but he's still very young, and Joe Cole's kind of the exciting young prospect. But I suppose you've got Scholes, Beckham and Owen kind of in their prime, because Owen is only 22, but that essentially was his prime, because it only got worse for him after this.
So this was the Metatarsals World Cup as well, wasn't it, where Beckham did his foot in, late comeback, touch and go whether he'd actually make it. And it was the famous one where he scored the free kick against Greece at Old Trafford and he went bananas.
Yeah, so Beckham had beat, this is about Danny Mills clearly, but Beckham had the thing of being sent off in 98, then his kind of redemption qualifying us for the World Cup, but then in the build-up, he broke his metatarsal and was, when he got there, was clearly not actually quite fit.
We do need to stress at this stage very much so that he was still a scumbastard. There's no love for...
Oh, he's definitely a scumbastard. Always will be.
He won't go on to shill off a World Cup in the Middle East or anything like that.
He did queue for the Queen, though, didn't he? So that probably makes up for it.
Does it?
Yeah. Or it means he's trying to get some honours.
And we're getting...
We're
getting bogged down in scum chat. The metatarsal, because Beckham had done his, but also Beckham's mate, Gary Neville, had done his.
Yes.
Hence why we're talking about Danny Mills.
Yeah, because Neville had basically been England's right back for ages at this point. He got in sort of 95, 96. He'd been in the Euro 96 and he'd kept his place, and Scum were pretty good at the time. So I guess it was understandable. But yeah, he also does his metatarsal before the World Cup and opens the door for Danny Mills.
Yay. Prior to this, he'd made like a handful of sub-appearances ahead of the World Cup of Mills. So he was very much on the fringes.
Yeah, he'd played. His only start had been the friendly that was at Elland Road. Did you go to that?
I didn't. I've never seen England at Elland Road. I wish I'd have done, yeah.
Yeah, we lost to Italy. But
that was March in the 2002, wasn't it?
Yeah, so yeah. He'd had that, and then, yeah, he'd made odd sub-appearances and stuff, but he was not generally considered to be a starter.
Yeah, so 19 England caps, started 11, but five of them were at this World Cup. So this really was his moment in the sun, wasn't it?
Yeah, it didn't get any better for him.
No. Some stuff from Planet Football. Have you heard of those guys, Rob?
Never. No, who are they? Any good?
Your former employer, for people who don't know.
My old job. We actually had a podcast called The Broken Metatarsal, which was all about noughties football, and Danny Mills appeared as a guest on one episode, which I declined to go on because I thought I don't really want to speak to Danny Mills.
But actually,
he came across...
I was going to say, was he an unbearable dick or was he all right?
You know what? He was. He had a few good stories from around this time. David Beckham's pre-tournament party being the main one, and he really didn't want to go, but his wife basically made him because it was Posh and Becks, and he was just celebrity spotting. I think it was Joan Collins he couldn't quite believe was there, and Steps.
Ray Winston, Natalie Imbruglia, Baby Spice, Elton John.
Mick Hucknall as well as a scumbag, wasn't it? Because Simply Red famously was named after Man United, I think, wasn't it? There was some of that going on. He's aged well.
Phil Mitchell in a wig.
But a lot of that, Steps were there. And Ray Winston.
And the dress code was white tie and diamonds. I didn't even know what white tie was back then in 2002, let alone white tie and diamonds. I was not turning up in one of those, and the diamonds definitely not. And he basically said that there was a massive marquee that was bigger than the pavilion at Elland Road with bouncy castles inside of it. And he basically spent most of his 4 hours in there just playing with his kids because he didn't know what to do, I guess.
I hope Ken Bates read that because it'll have irked him. Someone's got up something bigger. The biggest conference centre between North East, Harrogate and Birmingham, or whatever it was he used to boast about.
It's all fine and well wearing your white tie and diamonds, isn't it? But if you've got kids of age 1 and 3, as Mills did at the time, wearing white's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's a bad choice.
Especially for a party. And diamonds, kids are just going to tug on them, aren't they? I always find that with mine anyway. Oh, dear me. Yeah, Steps, great. His inclusion in the squad, though, wasn't universally welcomed. He got slated in The Guardian. David Lacey in The Guardian absolutely eviscerated him.
I mean, this does seem kind of harsh reading back on it. But it was the general reaction. People didn't think Danny Mills was a very good footballer. Even quite a lot of people in Leeds were pretty unsure of him.
Well, remember the chant, "Danny Mills is fucking brilliant," was ironic at first.
Yeah, exactly.
And it evolved into something more sincere when he kind of bought into the joke, you know?
Yeah, and he did put in some good performances for us, and I think people quite liked him when he was fairly versatile because he'd play centre-back sometimes, and he did a decent job when he had to fill in elsewhere for us. So I think people kind of grew to appreciate him. But yeah, when the early stages of Danny Mills at Leeds, it was a joke, was that song.
Yeah.
He was a bit erratic as well, in that he was constantly getting sent off or booked. I think he'd missed 10 games through suspension that season. And I think we'd probably had more players maybe in that squad if it weren't for some terrible disciplinary records, because like Alan Smith certainly had his brushes with referees. I think Lee Bowyer had different
some issues.
Issues
to deal with, yeah. as did Woodgate at the time. Both of them did, yes.
So yeah, but Danny Mills was part of that, and I think he certainly wasn't even expecting himself to get into the squad.
Yeah, David Lacey says, right up to the last moment, Swedes, Argentinians and Nigerians hope they would not receive the news they least wanted to hear, but there it is. Danny Mills has been picked for England's World Cup squad.
Oof.
Harsh. And you've given number two as well. So Danny Mills has talked about this, where he said when he got that number, he was like, might be playing it. I've been given the right back number, is that? That's not a piss about. Yeah, I think Bowyer was unlucky because also drafted in late with Trevor Sinclair to this squad, who was replacing Danny Murphy. And Lee Bowyer's better than both of them.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. David O'Leary, obviously his manager, though, was hugely supportive in the build-up to this and enjoyed his selection. Was this the one where O'Leary was in the box as well in the studio?
I can't remember where this actually came from.
I think he was a pundit at that tournament, wasn't he? Which
yes.
He basically used to slag off Leeds players, weirdly.
Yeah, so David O'Leary is still Leeds manager at this point as
yes.
well, it's worth saying, because that would change not long after the World Cup. But yeah, he is still Leeds manager, and he says, there were times last season Danny Mills was a liability to Leeds. His disciplinary record was abysmal. It's totally unacceptable for a player to miss 10 games through suspension as Danny did. So that's good.
He knows he has to mend his ways because I have told him so. I don't want a player who lacks self-control and persistently gets himself into trouble.
In the very early days of doing the magazine, I think before we'd done the podcast, we spoke to Danny Mills, didn't we? And we ended up taking out some stuff he'd said about O'Leary because...
We wondered if it was slanderous.
Because it was borderline slanderous. So certainly no love lost. It wasn't anything particularly juicy, was it? I think he was kind of hinting at the fact that, like, there's a reason O'Leary hasn't got another job or something,
yeah.
It was fairly mild at the time, but with O'Leary still kind of in the management game-ish at that point, we were like, oh, let's just leave that aside.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's not what you want from your manager necessarily, is it?
No, and the final line that we've got here on the sheet is, the bottom line is that if I knew Danny would miss 10 games again next season through suspension, I'd put him on the transfer list now. I mean, that's not backing your player. What it sounds to me like is that he's challenging his player to improve himself, but he's going about it in a way that's really objectionable.
Yeah.
That somebody like Danny Mills, from what we've seen subsequently, you're thinking, well, he's not going to necessarily respond well to that kind of... It's stick rather than carrot, isn't it?
Mm. He's a strange character, is Mills, because in some ways, when he talks about this World Cup, he's fairly self-deprecating in that he'll sort of point out that he was not of the level of player of like Beckham and Owen and Ferdinand and that sort of group. But then at the same time, he kind of bigs himself up and then goes, yeah, and I got loads of money too.
Mm.
So it's that element of it just kind of makes you think,
the self-deprecation is offset by bragging.
Yeah, exactly.
Which makes it hard to buy into.
Yeah. So it should be kind of a more fun story than it is.
And I think what Mills, I mean, this is probably a separate discussion, but what Mills seems to lack is the self-awareness of thinking of who is the audience for these shows that I do. Like Under the Cosh was the one that really annoyed people, wasn't it? Where he was essentially saying, I earned fucking loads from Leeds, even when they were going under. I'd negotiated myself an amazing deal. I was like, well, yeah, but this contributed to the downfall of our football club. And the audience that you're saying this to, it's not just you in a room with your footballer mates, which might be a good way to get people to open up and say stuff. The people who are actually consuming it are football fans, the very same people who essentially feel like you fucked over.
Mm. I think that was part of the reason we got him on the World Cup and not Leeds, because I was just a bit like, don't ask him about Leeds. He's kind of done a bit of that recently and it's not gone down well.
I mean, and Olo did have a point here as well. 13 yellows, 2 reds that season. So that's bad by any stretch, plus an additional ban for probably quite rightly using foul and abusive language at Jeff Winter, and I think it was Andy Durso was fourth official. I think he'd had a fair pop at both of them when he'd been sent off against Arsenal.
Yeah, I think Mills in that Planet Football interview did say, like, yeah, but it was Jeff Winter, you know, probably worth it.
Jeff Winter was an absolute dick, it's worth saying.
Yeah, and he's gone on to say stuff like he's developed a bit of an edge to his personality doing like after dinner speaking and tweeting and stuff like that, hasn't he? Because he was from Teesside, and obviously famously people in Teesside hate people in Leeds and hate Leeds United. So our refs Leeds hating bastards? Jeff Winter seems to suggest so.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Did you know that Xavi Hernandez used to scan over 8 times in the 10 seconds before receiving the ball? It's therefore not surprising that he rarely lost it. Scientific studies have shown just how important scanning is in soccer. Players who scan more, for example, make twice as many successful forward passes than those who scan less. But training this skill is difficult, and that's why thousands of players trust Be Your Best, the soccer training app in virtual reality, designed to improve players' game intelligence. To learn more, visit beyourbest.com and use code POD20 to get 20% off your first subscription.
Into the group games then at this World Cup. England-Sweden was the first one. Kicked off at 10:30. I loved 2002. It was my proper heyday. Young, full of hope. DJing at that point.
See, I was on study leave for my A-levels, which was great because it meant I had all day to go drinking.
I finally had disposable income and a fun job, although I didn't, because I was DJing, didn't often get up at 10:30 in the morning.
See, whereas I smuggled a bag of beers into a bar in Wakefield and stood drinking my own beers watching
England.
So
you didn't have to pay.
Exactly. Fuck. Also, the queue was shit as well. It took you like an hour to get in there for a pint. So
yeah. I was at primary school. We were all there.
You sneak the beers in?
We were all steaming in the school canteen.
How old were you then, Rob? That was 20 years ago.
2002, I'd have been 8.
Oh, God, that's annoying. First game, 1-1 England-Sweden. Neither Mills nor England were particularly good in this one.
Yeah, it was Mills' fault.
The famously slow start that England have in tournaments, although that's obviously offset this year with the Iran thumping.
Yeah, I think it's weird to criticise this World Cup when you do look back at some other ones, because we're talking about 2014 and 2010 and how terrible they were, but this is remembered as a good England team, and it was still, the group stages were terrible.
Yeah.
Like it wasn't a vintage Swedish team either, you wouldn't say, and the thinking was that we would probably win this. Argentina was a tough game, and then we'd probably beat Nigeria as well. But yeah, it was not a great opening match. Well,
this is a thing, being sort of that tournament before the Golden Generation. You had like Travis Sinclair on the left wing and Nicky Butt, I think, played in midfield. Mm. Didn't Pele describe Nicky Butt as like the best midfielder at the tournament or something?
He's always had some weird opinions on footballers, Pele, for someone who was so good at it. I remember
Barry Manning's in the hospital at the minute, so let's not be too mean about him.
That's true.
Okay. Carry on.
I just remember him once trying to say Steve McManaman, and he was just saying it in a really funny way. I don't know where he kept calling him McManamaho or something, but it was good. I enjoyed it.
Good.
But yes, we drew. Mills was at fault for the goal. From The Guardian, I was looking back over some reports. It said Sven-Goran Eriksson's team looked like fourth formers who wandered into a sixth form college.
Oh, bless them. Bless them. On to the next game then. The famous clashes with Argentina, and England won here. This was a lunchtime kickoff, Michael, so presumably you arrived in the pub where your own beer's already steaming. 12:30 kickoff.
It was, and this was Bielsa's Argentina.
Really? Mm. Now then.
In this World Cup. And we were good-ish. It was a bit, from what I remember of this game, it was not.
And was this the 1998 redemption arc, this one?
Yes, because Beckham is the one that scores the penalty. I think Michael Owen dives for it, as he always did.
Yeah.
But he's English, so we kind of, we're willing to overlook the fact that Owen's a snivelling little cheat as well. And someone who, a bit like Mills, the more you hear of him, the harder it is to find anything redeeming about him. You're just like, okay, maybe just stop talking for a little bit. Like no one at any of his clubs has anything good to say about Michael Owen anymore, do they?
No, which I loved Michael Owen around this time because he was really, really good and been like England's best and most exciting player. But yeah, he's a very strange man, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah, but Mills in this game, actually quite good. I was looking back through the minute by minute. I quite enjoyed I just looked through for any mentions of him in 30 minutes. It says, England are on top here, you know. They enjoy a spate of possession down the right wing, starring an amazing cameo from Mills and his absurd mix of skillful jinks and hopeless close control.
Love it.
He was 100 miles an hour kind of a player, was Mills, wasn't he? That was the thing.
There was no finesse, was there? It was
no. Yeah. I remember him. He used to dribble the ball with
muck and bullets. Johnny dribbled the ball with it
about 10 meters in front of him. Yeah. It was never glued to his foot, was it? It was just kick it, run after it, because he was fairly athletic, I suppose. If we're going to be generous to him.
So the hope ignited then in that game, and then the third and final group game was a 0-0 against Nigeria. 7:30 kickoff, bloody hellfire! I remember that.
I just remember getting a bus into Wakefield with my bag of beers. I don't think I took them for the first game. I think maybe there were an evolution of the through the World Cup, thinking I can't be queuing and spending all this money. I'm just going to smuggle in some.
Oh, I'd love to sit you down with a psychologist.
Some bottles of Beck's as well, which isn't even particularly nice. It was probably cheap somewhere.
Yeah,
but yeah, for the Nigeria game again, having beaten Argentina, which I mean, I was in Wakefield for the Argentina game, and it was on Westgate. If you know Wakefield, it's on the big road in the middle. It went fucking mental. There were people like out in the streets rocking buses around, and there were people smashing bus stops.
That's
and stuff.
It's typical for Wakefield.
People absolutely lost the plot over that game. And then from there, we had to endure a 0-0 with Nigeria.
Was this the really good Nigeria kit?
Very Englandy. Nigeria have had loads of good kits.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm going to say yes.
I remember what to let us watch this at school, and I didn't really understand the format of a group stage at this point. And I was just like, it's the World Cup, you win, you go through. And we obviously drew 0-0, and the little table came up at the bottom with England first or second. And the rest of the school, who were really into football at that point, going mental. And I was just kind of stood there like, I don't really know what's going on. Like, why is everyone celebrating? We've just drawn 0-0.
Yeah, from the Guardian report, it kind of sums up this game quite well. It said, that's it. England are through and they're playing against Denmark. Is there anything to say about this game? Nope. Oh, hold on. There's one thing. If England had won, they wouldn't have been able to face Brazil until the semis. Now they're lined up to meet in the quarters.
Right. Okay. Which we'll get to in due course. Another 12:30 kickoff for the second round. England 3, Denmark 0. Mills in this one again.
Yeah, and this is when Rio Ferdinand scores in this game. That's probably, again, a separate episode. Rio Ferdinand is at this point having the tournament of his life. He's looking like England's best player, possibly the best defender in the whole tournament. Mills, though, is doing all right.
Yep.
He's doing all right. He gets mentioned. He's involved in one of the goals. He plays it down the line to Beckham, and he then crosses it in and we score. So he also does a Danny Mills thing. If you look at the minute by minute, it says 49 minutes, brawl. Mills clouts Henriksen with his forearm.
That made me think of an aircraft where you see the instructions for if you hear brace.
He should have walked, but the lucky lad gets away with a yellow.
No, you wonder how many red cards and yellow cards Mills would have got in the current game, don't you? 3-0 against Denmark, England equaling their best ever result in a World Cup at that point.
And I think the expectation at this point was
through the roof.
It was very Englandy. I feel like subsequent tournaments have maybe made England fans a bit more, a bit more bitter and hesitant to get excited by stuff. Maybe that's not true. When you look at pictures of people throwing pints around Box Park when we had to score a third in a pretty meaningless game against Wales. But I don't know, I felt like at the time there was a lot of hype. And I think we're still, Euro 96 was still kind of in memory, and we felt like we'd been robbed at 98. So it was, I don't know, it felt like there was something was building at this point.
Yeah, and the sense that we could maybe go and get something from Brazil, which again was another breakfast time kickoff. Not acceptable.
Yeah, we take the lead against Brazil. And again, Mills is involved, finds Heskey down the right. I mean, this was basically Mills' game, was kind of kick it down the wing and hope someone finds it. Like I said, he was quite a basic player in a lot of ways, but
football was more basic then, though, as well.
Yeah, it was.
It's still a lot more 4-4-2 kick and rush, wasn't it?
It's kind of a lot of what Rasmus Christensen does now, is just sort of knock it down the line for a player to run onto.
Yeah, it's not actually a bad comparison. He's quite a similar player, but I'm sure Rasmus is a nicer man. Let's just say that. But anyway, in that game, this is the game where Ronaldinho is absolute pomp at this World Cup. He's unbelievably good. He was good for about 2 years as Ronaldinho before he kind of seemed to get fat and not arsed. But he was absolutely unbelievable at this stage. So he has scored the goal that goes over Seaman, which I'm still not entirely sure was deliberate. But after that, he's then sent off for a foul on Mills, which is an untidy sort of tackle. I think the way the Guardian report is saying that he thinks that the ref has also seen an elbow in there, which isn't actually the case. And
Did he milk it?
Well, Mills has since said that he was about to get up and Paul Scholes came over to him and the ref getting cards out, stay down. And basically just forced him to lay down on the ground. And then, sure enough, Ronaldinho is then sent off.
I mean, what an opportunity this was for England then, with Ronaldinho sent off on 56 minutes, we should say.
Yeah, so we've got nearly a full half of football to try and peg Brazil back.
And didn't.
But no, that was England.
Yeah. Which just explains why England fans are a bit like they are now, 20 years on from this. You know, the point?
It's hard to know how much this is taking the piss, but I did look through the minute by minutes for this game as well, and it says 83 minutes, great tackle from Danny Mills to deny Adilson. He really is the best.
There's no sarcasm font, is there?
I think, though, weirdly, I think England fans went on the same journey as Leeds fans with Mills during this World Cup, because he was kind of in and he was bad in the first game. And then as it went through, you were like, I think he's all right. Yeah. He's not letting us down. He's doing okay.
And there was an element of defensiveness as well, in the same way that we were defensive over Calvin getting into the England team.
Yeah.
Because he was ours, even if he was a bastard. Then we
I liked seeing Mills in this tournament. And I know Ferdinand was the obvious star of it, but there was also maybe a slight feeling that we weren't seeing Rio Ferdinand in a lead shirt again at this point as well, because there was a huge amount of interest in him, and he's just made himself probably the most, he did make himself the most valuable defender in the world at this stage. So whereas Mills, you're like, well, we keep him. So that's good. We get to keep an England player.
Well, Phil McNulty for the BBC gave him 7 out of 10 for the tournament overall. The player labelled a liability before the World Cup kept his temper in check and had a solid tournament. He made one mistake against Sweden that cost a goal, but otherwise did not let England down.
Yeah, and McNulty also, just to give the Rio Ferdinand subplot, he does give him player of the tournament, 9 out of 10. A world-class performer.
And where will he be next season? At Leeds United, of course. Because it's interesting how you can chart the start of the downfall properly. We mentioned before about playing Cardiff in the FA Cup in the January. It gets to this summer and suddenly this shimmering mirage of a future vision of Leeds United with all these World Cup world-class players just starts to just gently crumble around the edges because O'Leary gets fired June 27th. Terry Venables is in. And then Danny Mills does end up as our first choice right back for most of the next season, though.
He does, but then Peter Reid tries to get rid of him, but by the time Peter Reid arrives,
is it Red Hot Air mode, firefighting?
We're away from the let's sell Rio Ferdinand for 30 million quid and everything's going to be fine. We're into, will someone please take Danny Mills' wages because we're fucked sort of territory. So he goes on loan to Middlesbrough for a season and then he can't agree a permanent move, so he ends up at Man City. I think we end up paying some of his wages, don't we?
Yeah.
And it's also more or less the end of Mills' England career as well. After this World Cup, he never gets himself established in the first team ever.
Seven more caps, yeah.
I don't think he helped himself because I think it was 2003 around Ferdinand's drugs test that he missed. The Man United players wanted the England players to strike for a game in Turkey, I think. And Danny Mills was just like, nah. and he said in the Planet Football interview, I don't think Gary Neville wasn't very happy, but I'm not really bothered.
And you're butting up against the institution there, aren't you? Which is always going to see you fall out of favour in the end. Very much Danny Mills style. Seven more caps, as I mentioned. Yeah, one final cap as a sub in a friendly against Portugal 2004 when he was on loan at Middlesbrough. So he wasn't quite dumb when we managed to get shot of him. And he's had a lot to say about his time at Leeds since, but I think we've run out of time on this one.
But let's remember the 2002 World Cup because that was a good Danny Mills time.
He was all right, wasn't he? And he hadn't said too much at that point.
He didn't let everyone down spectacularly, which was what the start of the tournament was. He's a terrible defender. He's going to get sent off. And in the end, he was fine.
And that is the Square Ball Guide to Danny Mills at the 2002 World Cup. We'll speak to you soon.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Did you know that Xavi Hernandez used to scan over 8 times in the 10 seconds before receiving the ball? It's therefore not surprising that he rarely lost it. Scientific studies have shown just how important scanning is in soccer. Players who scan more, for example, make twice as many successful forward passes than those who scan less. But training this skill is difficult, and that's why thousands of players trust Be Your Best, the soccer training app in virtual reality, designed to improve players' game intelligence. To learn more, visit beyourbest.com and use code POD20 to get 20% off your first subscription.